back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. A very special guest is Jay Widener. Now, is there any topics that you normally don't get to go into on radio shows because either it doesn't come up or it's not relevant to the conversation? Because I'm kind of a very flippant individual and I like to go where others fear to tread.
Well, I'm ready to go anywhere as long as it's legal. So, you know, fire away. I can handle pretty much anything.
Because to be honest, I don't actually know a terribly large amount about you, and kind of in a let's say incapable of asking the right questions.
Well,
if you know what I mean.
Let me give you a little bit of background, and it'll help you. All right.
Sure.
So I got started in all this. I was a journalist and a screenwriter, and I believed in science, and didn't believe in a spiritual world or anything like that. I was an atheist. And I knew everything, okay? And then one day, I bought a book. And the book was called Mystery of the Cathedrals by an anonymous guy named Fulcanelli. It was a book by a French writer translated into English that said that the secret of alchemy was written on the Gothic cathedrals of Europe. And I, being a fan of Gothic cathedrals, thought that this was the most preposterous thing I'd ever heard of. And so I began to debunk the book. This is in the early 80s. I began to debunk the book. And in the end, the book debunked me. And this book is a very specially written book designed to initiate the reader into a higher consciousness. And I did not know that then, and I was in lower consciousness. How could I have known it? And so basically, I learned by studying this book that everything I know or everything I knew was wrong. And that shattered my world, cost me my marriage, cost me my job, cost me my family, my friends, everything. It literally shattered my world. And I was alone in this world. And there was very few people in those days to even talk to because nobody... You know, it was just not a big thing. Nobody, you start whispering about what was really happening in the world, and you would be shut out, you'd be talked about, you'd be insulted, and friendless. And that, of course, happened to me, which is fine. I don't really care, because I'm really only after the truth. The only premium I have is the truth. So, but what that did was it so thoroughly shattered my world that I became extremely open-minded to a lot of things that I previously would never have looked at. And I began investigating things, using my journalistic skills to investigate other things besides, you know, the mystery of the cathedrals or the cyclic cross of Hende, which is a book I wrote about, a cross that's in the south of France that tells us when the world is going to end with the solar flare. And so I applied that to not only Stanley Kubrick and how he did the moon landings, but the Denver Airport murals, I'm the person that really brought those out. The Georgia Guidestones, which are a monument built by an anonymous man, just like the man who wrote the Mystery of the Cathedrals, pretty much saying that, you know, he wants to, advocating only 500 million people on Earth, which means 11 out of 12 people are going to have to bite the bullet. And so I began to realize that there was this very pernicious, evil group who did not have our interests in mind, and who really weren't that smart. They just had a lot of power. And they were taking over the world, and I was seeing it, and I've been trying to do everything I can to simultaneously stop them from what they're doing and in waking up people, and that's what I've devoted my last 25 years of my life to. And so I'm well-versed in an amazing amount of subjects because I have become a vast generalist as opposed to a specialist. And so a specialist knows everything about one thing. Well, I probably don't know everything about one thing, but I know a little bit about just about everything. And that has created a kind of weird wiring in my brain where I can riff from Stanley Kubrick to the New World Order to, you know, the structural components for good filmmaking, over to alchemy, back over to the JFK assassination, Sandy Hook, 9/11, the secret of alchemy, and immortality. What is health care? What is it really to be healthy? What is meditation? So I have this, like, incredible vast knowledge that I somehow accrued just by investigating all these different stories and leads.
Mm. And through the study of what I've come to call scumbaggery,
yeah,
two things happen.
No, that's very enlightening.
Yeah,
scumbags
yeah.
are extremely enlightening.
Yes, yes. Two things happen to me that I think usually happen to everybody is, you have this kind of feeling of loss, like everything I knew to be true is now a lie, and you kind of have to start from square one. It's like getting your high school diploma, and then somebody saying your high school diploma is irrelevant. Now you've got to go back to preschool.
Yep.
That's really traumatic. It was for me. And the other element is you develop a really zany sense of humor because you can't maintain any form of sanity without it.
That's right. Well, I have a very, very well-developed sense of humor, and I know you're right. It's frequently gallows humor, but it's still humor. And I love life, and I love the human race. And I think we've been misdirected by these... by this cabal, and I think if we can unattach ourselves from them, from the cabal, then I think we're going to discover who we really are, and I think we're actually a really cool race, and I don't think we're the environmentally destructive, genocidal, murdering maniacs that we think we are. I think they made us into that. I know they made us into that. And I don't think it's our real nature. I think our real nature is compassionate and peaceful and loving. And I've seen the evidence. I've traveled the world, and I've seen the evidence. And so I think the human race is actually the center of a cosmic drama. And I know this irritates a lot of people, but I really do. I think that we are a very, very, very important component of the cosmic drama. And our success as a species will be heralded by all of the intelligence of the universe. I really do. I really believe that. I really think that the other outside intelligences, whether they're extra-dimensional or spiritual or physical, are cheering for us to succeed in the struggle that we're currently in.
Mm. I've had a number of conversations with people, Jay, that they say that the human race is a cancer and that we deserve to be wiped out by the New World Order.
And that's what the New World Order wants us to think.
That's exactly what I tell these people.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing right into their hands, bro.
You are. It's like Paul Ehrlich wrote The Population Bomb in 1968. And I read it, and it traumatized the hell out of me. He said that the population growth currently at that time would completely wipe out the world by the late 70s. We would all be dead of famine. And, you know, and I was a 17-year-old kid and scared the living daylights out of me. And so I did everything to make sure that I wasn't, you know, hurting the world and all this. And then the 70s came and nobody died. Then the 80s came, population's still growing, nobody's dead. The New World Order is flat out wrong. But what they did was they traumatized us really good. They really did a great job of traumatizing us with their false statements and lies, and they're still doing it, and they're still saying the same thing. And then, so, you know, finally one time I just had to stop and say, is the world really overpopulated? I mean, how do we know that the world is overpopulated? You can say, oh, well, we're using up the resources, but are we really using up the resources, or is it the multinational corporations that are raping the Amazon? And the answer is, of course, it's the multinationals that are doing it. You could have a world of 1 million Bill Gates running around with their Lear jets and their, you know, 50 fleet cars and their giant mansions, and the world could be destroyed within a few years. You could have 10 billion Zen monks who only have a robe and a cup and a mat to sleep on, and you could fly over the world 100,000 times and never see any trace of human development. So is it population? Or is it the distribution of resources? The answer is it's not population, it's distribution of resources. And so, not to say that, you know, burgeoning populations aren't going to be a crush on nature and species, but, you know, it's the multinational corporations and their raping of the world that's really doing it.
Mm. Well, there's also the element of ordo ab chao, the Masonic principle to create order out of chaos, and maybe right. they're attempting to deliberately create environmental and population type crises so that when everybody is really fearful and reacts to it, they can come in and propose the solution and act as the saviors and wind up the rulers.
And that's exactly what they're doing. That's why I know that they did Sandy Hook. They did Sandy Hook on purpose. They did not kill those children, like some conspiracy theorists said. They like to kill children. What are you talking about? Of course they killed the children. They like that. They want that chaos. They have agents of chaos all over the world right now. If you've ever read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John, I'm going to forget his name now. It's a very
Perkins.
Good
I had him on the show. Yeah.
He's a wonderful guy. And, I mean, he was basically assigned to just create chaos so that the multinational corporations could come in after the chaos had been created and rape the place. And you're right. As soon as they take over, their final takeover, then you're going to see all these crazy issues are just going to disappear. Abortion, gay rights, all these really divisive things that are going on right now, they're just going to disappear. They're going to come in like heroes. There's going to be no more school shootings. There's going to be no more mass murderers. There's going to be probably no more terrorism. All these things will go away when they take over because they're the ones doing it. There are no terrorists outside of them. There are no mass murderers outside of them. There never were mass murderers before, say, 50 or 60 years ago, or there were a few, but not many. Now they're all over the place. You know, why? And the answer is because they want it. That's why they create the television shows that they're creating. They're not creating entertainment. They're creating confused minds because confused minds are easier to control.
Yeah, and so are fearful minds.
Oh, that's the number one ingredient, fear. They love that. All the while telling you that they're trying to save you and protect you. You know, we had presidential debates this last year, excruciating when we have presidential elections in the United States. It's a horrible time to be alive in the United
States. I had to take a whole week off and consume vast amounts of top-shelf liquor in order to get over the election.
That's a good remedy, because these people are completely insane. They really think that there's a difference, right, between the two guys. And in one of the debates, Obama said, well, the chief job of the President of the United States is to protect the American people. I'm like, what are you talking about? Where does it say that your job is to protect me? I don't want your protection, first off, okay? I can protect myself. But where does it say that you are here to... Who are you, our nanny, to come in and try to protect us? You know, what a presumptuous statement to even make. And who wants him to, that little skinny runt, to protect me anyway? And so it's like, it's ridiculous. The job of the President of the United States is to ensure that the Constitution be followed. That's his job. But he won't say that.
Yeah. I always get kind of I fear sometimes at some points that I might get jaded. You know what I'm saying, Jay?
Yeah.
Like I think a couple of might have been quite a few months ago. I think there was some scare about some sort of a car bomb in Times Square, and my girlfriend comes home and tells me about it. Vinny, did you hear about this big truck bomb that was about to go off in Times Square that they averted? And without even looking at any of the evidence, I said, "Oh, don't worry, baby. It was probably just the FBI." And it was.
You're right. Yeah, I when 9/11 occurred, I got an email from a famous conspiracy guy in the United States, very famous. You know who he was. And he said, "Well, what do you think, you know, happened here?" And this was like noon on 9/11, 2001. And, you know, I knew that his email was being watched. I knew my email was being watched. And I knew we were probably on the verge of some kind of martial law. At least at that time I was thinking that, right? And so I was thinking, well, you know, how can I tell him what I really feel about 9/11? And so that he understands what I think about it. And, but it doesn't cause anyone to read the email to think that I'm advocating, you know, violent overthrow or something, right? So I wrote back, you know, four words. I wrote, "The Zionists have won." That's all I said. right? And still to this day, he'll call me up and he'll write me and say, "You were the only one that day. You were the only one who knew what was going on." I said, "That's just because I'm a very, very cynical person."
See, and you know, one of my other great fears, Jay, is that I'll always be right. You know,
that's, you are.
that really messed with my head if I was always correct about stuff. You know.
Yeah, that's my favorite line in movies is from Jurassic Park. Jeff Goldblum, the dinosaurs are surrounding the room and they're trying to get in, and there's chaos everywhere. And he just kind of looks down at, you know, disgust, and he goes, "I'm really getting tired of being right about all this." That's sort of how I feel about it.
No. Wait, hold on a second. It was actually outside the T-Rex cage when the T-Rex was busting out. And him and Sam Neill are looking through the front thing, and he says, "Damn, I hate being right all the time."
Yeah, so that's it right there. It's like, oh my god, and nobody will listen to you. So it's like you're seeing a car accident. You know it's going to happen, and you got the driver right next to you, and you say, "Listen, don't go down that road. Slow down. You're going to get in a car accident," and nobody listens to you.
That's the frustration, isn't it?
Yeah.
Knowing what's going on and not being able to convince people that you actually know. That I mean, they believe that you think you believe or whatever. But look, facts are facts, and sometimes we know without being able to prove what we know. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's intuitive, and you get by the time, you know, I've been out so long, I'm so good at it now that, you know, my wife always says, "Oh, the news before it happens." You know, that's what she tells everybody. That if you want to know what's going on, just let Jay tell you what's happening. And then I tell him, and then I say, "Okay, come back in 6 months and see how right I am." And they always come back and go, "Wow, man. Whoa." So, I mean, it's kind of easy, really. Once you fully engross yourself into their cynical mindset, the manipulative mindset, then you just ask yourself, "Okay, if I was them, what would I do next?" And then you figure it out. So what are they going to do next? Well, obviously, they're going to have another false flag here soon, I would say.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm going to have some kind of a third world war. We haven't had a world war in quite some time, you know. The UN's been kind of stagnating, and I don't know. Let's just think for a moment. What would a sociopathic, scumbaggery, psycho, child-raping, person-sacrificing eugenicist think like? And then whatever you think like will probably wind up being the play-by-play of world events. Jay Widener is my guest, and we'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on the Organized Crime Network, 5 days a week, trying to ensure that drug running and sexual trafficking is not abated. Why, people like Jay Widener, welcome back to the show, sir.
That was one of my favorite movies, by the way.
Sorry, what?
Oh, yeah, Godfather?
Oh, yeah.
Great movie.
It really was.
If you really want to know what life is really like at the top, watch The Godfather, especially Godfather 2.
Favorite quote from the Godfather 2 is, "Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in."
my favorite quote is, "An honest man, that means you're a problem."
Hey, there's nothing truer than that, really, is there?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if you think about it, the big thing that we have to worry about right now is that what's happened here is that, you know, over the last 20 years is we've figured out that we're being controlled by these mobs or by a mob. And I think we are now that that's occurred, we're now coming to part two of this thing, which is, okay, how the hell do we get rid of this cabal? And that's the question we have not answered yet. We've identified them. We know who they are, pretty much. It's really hard for them to get away with anything anymore. But we have not figured out how to get rid of them. And I think that's going to be the biggest problem that we face over the next 10 years.
I think that everybody's got their own problem that they're trying to solve in terms of the New World Order apparatus. Like, I feel part of my job is to solve the corporate-controlled scumbaggery media element, yeah. and I've taken that to heart. Other people try to expose court corruption. Other people try to recruit sheriffs to stop impinging on people's civil liberties through the federal government. Other people write books about the corporate bribery and economic hitmen like John Perkins, as we mentioned earlier. I think what's happening here is that the human race essentially has people within it that act much like white blood cells do in the body.
That's right.
They detect the virus, and they all attack it from every direction.
Well, I would agree with that analogy completely. That's really what we are. And I had an incredibly intense shamanic experience in 1986, where I was essentially told that I was a white blood cell inside of cancer. And I really actually believe that. And and so, yeah, you're right. What's funny is how we kind of walk around with a light around us, like David Icke. They can't seem to knock him off. They tried everything. And I used to correspond with Jim Garrison, who was the only guy who ever prosecuted anybody in the JFK assassination. Oliver Stone made a film about him. And he used to tell me that the greatest pleasure he had in life was that he got to dance with the devil, and the devil that he got the last move. And I think that's what it's like. It's like we're dancing with the devil, only we can't see it. We can't really... It's an invisible devil. We see the effects of what this force is doing, but we can never correctly identify the source. And we can say, "Oh, it's Obama, or it's the CIA, or it's the New World Order, or it's the Rothschilds." Everybody's got like names for it, but we haven't really identified it. Not really, and we're not even sure if the people we've identified are really the ones doing it. Or are they just the surrogates, the proxies who've been placed out front? And how deep does this thing go? How much underneath the surface is it? Why did Woodrow Wilson one time say that there is a power on this earth that is so ruthless, so powerful, that I have seen the most strong of men shake? Whenever this force is mentioned, why did he say that? And the answer, and so I think we haven't really identified the force yet. We think we have, but I think it might even be deeper than we have ever thought it was.
What if it's a non-physical manifestation, like a mentality of a virus, a demon possession, a spiritual entity, or something?
That's what I believe. I go back to the Nag Hammadi texts, which are 2,100 years old. They haven't been screwed with by anybody. We can read what they say, and they say that a psycho spiritual parasite has invaded the human race called Archons, and they get off on killing and war and strange weird sex, and we're like a patient on life support. They're a parasite, so they can't kill us, because if they kill the host, they'll die. So they're just keeping us alive enough so that we can feed them psychic energy. That's pretty
kind
much
of like
the conclusion I reached.
It's kind of like the face hugger off of Alien, don't you think?
Yeah,
you know?
A little bit.
They feed you oxygen to keep you alive, so that they can gestate whatever it is inside you.
Exactly, and so that puts us in a precarious situation where we have these parasites, and these parasites are keeping us alive. If we rebel, then what will they do? But first we have to figure out who we're rebelling against. And then what will the rebellion look like? And we haven't answered those two questions yet.
Mm. Well, there's an old saying, I've met the enemy, and he is us.
Well, he may be us, or something within us. But again, maybe I'm a fool. I still believe in the human race, and I still believe in the ultimate goodness of humans. And I may be wrong. I haven't passed over into full 100% cynicism yet. Nietzsche was walking down the street one day, and he saw a man brutally beating his horse. The horse was at the end of its days, and it couldn't take one more step. And so the man beat the horse to death right on the street. And Nietzsche saw this, and this precipitated his complete mental collapse. So Nietzsche had been going through life as a rebel and trying to create an alternative philosophy to the overarching criminal philosophy that he was living under. And he believed in the intimate goodness of the human race and that we were evolving into something great. And then one moment, he saw something so horrible, so dehumanizing that, he lost his mind. And I think all of us who are, seekers in this thing, we may all have a moment like that waiting for us where we see something so disturbing that we can never come back to our humanity. I pray it doesn't happen to me, but I'm one of those guys that looks. So one day I'm going to see something that I wish I had never seen,
I think maybe the assumption that you will see that is the thing that will actually help you retain your sanity when you do.
Yeah, and believe me, I've seen some very, very, very scary stuff in my life. Very, very scary stuff. People who have been killed and brutally murdered by the horrible police powers and these things, they have disturbed me, but at the same time, maybe I have some kind of spiritual something in me that keeps me whole. How long I can keep that up, I don't know. I would say that if I was the New World Order, I would do something on TV of such brutality that you would shock everybody into submission, and I think that's probably what they're planning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's called the shock doctrine. It's by a woman, I forget her name now. Last name is Klein. Nicole Klein, I think, is her name. And she wrote a book called The Shock Doctrine.
Naomi Klein.
Yeah, Naomi Klein. And which is about how they control us through disasters. How they'll create a disaster to take over our minds through the fear that is engendered by the disaster. And so I can only say, if I was them, and I certainly hope they don't do it, I would do something so brutal, so obviously brutal, that we are shocked into total submission. It might work. I hope they aren't listening to me, though.
Well, it works on, what was it, you can fool some of the people most of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And I feel that if they were trying to do something to shock everybody into submission, it would work on a lot of people, but it wouldn't work on everybody.
It wouldn't work on you or me, but yeah.
Well, hold on. There's another thing here, is that the more you experience something, the less sensitive you become to it. So maybe we've seen so many horrible things that they would have to do something over and above and beyond, maybe 10 times worse than something you or I have ever seen or heard of, in order to affect us now than perhaps they would have had to do before.
Well, that brings me back to Sandy Hook, because, what is worse than the brutal killing of children, beautiful six-year-old children? And the answer is probably nothing, not really. I can't think of anything more brutal, more horrifying. And they did it. They did it. And they stuck it in our faces. And guess what? It's not working. They're not going to be able to come get the guns of Americans. Americans aren't going to give up their guns. They're not giving up their guns. If that was the intention, it's actually made Americans more adamant than ever to keep their guns. There's been more gun sales since Sandy Hook than ever before. So it's not working. It really is not working.
So, what happens to somebody who's completely narcissistic, psychopathic, demon-possessed, archontic entities or whatever, when they suddenly figure out that everything that they've been planning and scheming for so long, everything that they thought they understand about the human race, no longer works?
Then they'll be the that's when they'll get vicious. That's when they become the cornered dog. That's why we can't. Nothing. If you're fighting, I've actually had to fight a cornered dog one time, and it was one of the more terrifying experiences of my life. And I realized that, you know, you could not confront the dog. There was nowhere for him to go. He was cornered, so he's going to kill you. And so the worst thing you can do is confront the cornered dog. So what did I do? I left the room and left the door open. Eventually, the dog left. Right. And I think that's kind of what we have to do. We have to be adamant that we're not going to let go of our principles in dealing with these guys, but I think we're going to have to let them go. And I know a lot of people out there want to see trials, want to see hangings on TV and all that, but I think we're going to have to turn the other cheek and be compassionate here and say, listen, you guys, just go home. Go back to your mansions and don't mess with this anymore.
Yeah. I mean, but then again, would they? I'm not sure if they understand the consequences of their actions.
No, they don't. Psychopathic people do not understand consequences. Some people say, "Well, psychopathic people have no fear." That's right. They have no fear. They have no fear. They have no love. They have no jealousy. They have nothing. There's nothing there. That's what you have to understand. They're not fearless. They don't have any empathy towards any human emotions, which is why I think that all psychopathic people are actually archons. And I think that archons and psychopathic people are the same thing, and I think we're beginning, i.e. through the web, we're beginning to identify these people, and that's one thing they do not want to ever happen, is to have us have the ability to actually see who they are and say, they are not human. That is not how a human being acts. And right now they've been flying under the radar for thousands of years, and we just say, oh, that person's just a narcissistic crazy man. And it's like, no, maybe there's something more. Maybe they actually are some kind of demon. And we're learning how to identify these guys. And I mean, I personally have developed my ability to identify them to a T. I mean, I can do it. I can pick them out from 50 yards. And I'm trying to teach people, actually using Sandy Hook as an example, how people can identify them so that these people do not ruin their lives. Because I don't know if you've ever had an encounter with a psychopath, but it is the most traumatizing event that you'll ever have in your whole life. Because they make you think that you're the one doing it. It's brilliant. It's brilliant how they work reality.
Yeah. And the other thing is, if we can identify them, what I'd love to be able to do is have some kind of a scientific or physiological recognition system. Like, you know how we got brain scans now, and they scan the brains of psychopaths, and there's nothing, right? You know, there's no color alone. Something like that would be really great.
That's it right there. I mean, maybe we should start having brain scans or something. I mean it. And finding out who these guys are that are walking among us and getting rid of them, not physically killing them, because that's what the archons would do to us. We don't do that. We just, you know, isolate them. That's all.
Or at least have something that would make everybody identify them. I mean, I hate to use a Nazi analogy, but, you know, Star of David on the arm identified who the Jews were and yeah, everything like that. Maybe there could be some giant swastika-type pentagram thingy that we could put on the arms of every single psychopath or whatever.
I think identifying a psychopath ahead of time is extremely useful for dealing with a psychopath. It happened to me recently. Someone said, "Well, you're dealing with that person. I think that person's a psychopath." And I thought, "Well, I'm pretty good at identifying psychopaths. I'll be able to tell you whether that person's a psychopath." I knew within 2 minutes that person was a psychopath.
All right, Jay Widener is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment coming right up at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
The flight to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you, give me a dessert, give me a dessert, give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick, give me that dessert. I'll have a Bloody Mary? Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go.
Welcome back.
You want to know what it's like?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment that we have here with Jay Widener. It's been a pretty frickin' quick 2 hours, Jay. I must say I've really enjoyed having you on here. I hope you've had fun.
Oh, yeah, it's been a great time. Good talking to people who are awake.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that if you're... I don't know about how you deal with people who are sort of... I don't know, douchebaggy or just plain idiots. For me, it's just block, whether it be on Skype or Facebook or emails or whatever. Anybody who just to me really seems like a real idiot who just doesn't get it. My mentality is: look, there's 7 billion other people out there that I could be hanging out with that I could actually enjoy myself with. You know?
Yeah. Don't waste your time with those people. They're not worth it. So I simply say, sir, there's about 20,000 books you need to read. When you're done, call me back. I mean, you have to be polite, but you know, Mark Twain once said, never get in an argument with a fool, because anyone watching will not be able to tell who's who. So, you know, don't ever get in an argument. Don't waste your energy with the people who don't get it. They're never going to get it. And, you know, it's much better to just keep driving on with the people who get it and making sure that they're more informed than they were yesterday. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah. I think they're kind of like energy vampires. And the trick with the vampire is you have to invite them in.
Yep. Yes, it will. You don't invite them in. That's the key. And that's why the vampire myths are around, because they're warning us about these people. If they are people, and they're, you know, one of the main things, a psychopath is don't have anything to do with them. That's the main thing. If you are with a psychopath or an archon, then just get away from them as fast as you can, and don't let them back in. And that's similar to the vampire myth of don't invite them in your house. Just don't invite them in. Just don't get it started, because you'll regret it forever. And, you know, as soon as I find out that someone does not pass my psychopath test, they're out of my life, like forever. I mean, forever. It's a 1 second drop. You're out. Don't ever call me. I'll never call you. Stay away from me and stay away from my family. And that's it. That's how you handle it. And so we have psychopaths in charge now, and we have to figure out how the hell we're going to get them when they're the ones who are leading us. And that's not going to be easy.
No. Because once a psycho wants you, right?
Yep.
That's when you've got a real frickin' problem.
He is right.
If they just want to associate with you and they want to do this, that, and the other with you, they most of the time don't make a huge amount of effort once you try to get rid of them. But it's once they have an obsession with controlling you or attacking you or destroying you, you don't have anywhere to retreat to where they won't find you. And that's what the government really has become.
Yeah, and also psychopaths tend to accuse you of exactly what they're doing. So it would behoove anyone, if you think you're dealing with an archon or a psychopath, listen very carefully what they're accusing you of. Because I guarantee you this, that is exactly what they're doing. This is another way that we can win. Because they are always telegraphing what they're doing by their accusations. So Obama wants to get the truth out about Sandy Hook. Well, then that means he wants to get nothing but lies out. Obama wants the American people to participate in the healthcare system. That means he doesn't want us to participate in the healthcare system. He wants to just tell us what to do. And so it's actually really enlightening. Once you've got it down that this person might be a psychopath, start listening to what they're saying about other people, and especially about you. Because whatever they're saying about you is really what they're planning to do to you. Especially what they say about you, what they think you're doing. They go, you're lying. Well, that means they're lying. You're trying to steal from me. That means they're trying to steal from you. And just listen and get your ear together, and you'll always be able to pick up. If they call you a petty criminal, then you probably know they're a petty criminal. It's really pretty amazing.
if they call you COINTELPRO, it means they're
probably COINTELPRO. And believe me, I have a psychopath who calls me COINTELPRO, and I've proven that she's a COINTELPRO. I've proven it beyond any shadow of a doubt. She is. And I've learned that. And it's one of the few things I've learned in the last few years is that a psychopath can never have anything original. Psychopaths don't come up with original art, original poetry, original songs, or anything like that. It's impossible for them to come up with anything original. They always take from original people their ideas and then trash those people when they're done stealing their ideas. This happens in corporations, happens in politicians, in the military, over and over and over. The same patterns are being repeated. And I really, truly believe that we're on the verge of, the human race is on the verge of being able to ID these suckers. And if we can finally ID them, then we can defeat them. But until we ID them, we're not going to be able to defeat them.
And also, there's the difficulty of IDing people who are in particular positions. Like, let's say somebody's a massive media entity or something like that,
yeah.
And then you as a much smaller media entity expose them, but very few people actually hear you, and they hear them 10 times over.
Oh, and they'll blast you to ribbons. Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you have to take that. We have to be able to. We kind of have to, if you're going to get in the ring with these guys, and you kind of got to be ready to take the punch. I'm not really afraid to take the punch. I just want them, you know, I just want, if they're going to kill me, make it quick. That's all.
Right. Well, Jay, we've only got a few minutes left. I was wondering if you would like to leave the audience and maybe even myself with some advice, some wisdom that's quite profound that you've learned over your life. I mean, the whole interview thus far has been virtually nothing but. I was just wondering, you know, what's one of the most profound things that you've ever learned over your life that let's say in 1,000 years from now, you'd love future generations to dig up in a time capsule?
I really, really believe that for non-psychopathic humans, there aren't mistakes. It may look like you've made a mistake, but I think if you live long enough, you'll find that there are no mistakes. That even when you did something wrong, like insult somebody or say something that you shouldn't have said, these are all lessons. And life is, the earth or the world, the universe is really a gigantic school. And we're here to pass get out of the school. And most of our time, we don't even know we're in a school. We don't even know we're being given tests. Every day you're being given a test. Did you pass today's test or not? Did you even know you were even given a test today? Once you understand that you were being given tests all the time, then you can start passing them. But most people don't even know they're in a school. They don't even know they've been given tests. They don't know they're given tests every day, and that if they pass a test, the tests get harder then to pass. And the tests are about your humanity, how you handle things. How did you handle that person? Did you take a little bit of time, that person at the checkout line, you know, to pay attention to them, to thank them, to the waitress that served you your food, to your family? The little things that really make a difference in life, you know. Did you treat those animals kindly, or were you mean to them? And these are the things in the end that make you what you are. And we're losing our humanity, and we have to really do everything we can on an individual level to make ourselves compassionate and peaceful and at one with the universe despite the incredible flaws.
Wise words. I have this feeling, and actually really my greatest fear is becoming the evil that I despise. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. It's my greatest fear, too, because I'll tell you what, by examining the manipulations, you begin to realize how easy it is to manipulate, and you could actually become a manipulator if you're not careful. That's the danger of this. A lot of conspiracy theorists end up being very powerful people, believe it or not. Bill O'Reilly, or you probably don't know who he is. He's a right-wing news guy here in the United States. He used to be a conspiracy theorist. He used to go out after the JFK assassination. He used to watch him when I was a kid. Now, he trashes anyone who even mentions a conspiracy. Why? Well, because he's making three $13 million a year at Fox News, and he doesn't have to do it anymore. So, but he did figure out by examining conspiracy theories how to manipulate people, and he manipulated his way to the top. And that happens a lot, by the way. A lot of the people that run major corporations and media in this country are actually started out as conspiracy theorists and gained power via being a conspiracy theorist, learning how to manipulate, learning how stupid people are, learning how easily they'll believe anything. And that's a big, treacherous place to go on. And I refuse to go that way, you know. I still, you know, foster a lot of affection for the human race. I'm not sure why, but I do.
It's called faith.
Yeah, I do have a lot of faith in us. I do. And I believe in a higher power. And I believe that the higher power has our ultimate interests in mind. And I really believe that the people who are murdering and killing and raping children, I really believe that there's a justice for them somewhere in this universe. I hope there is.
All right. Hope, faith, and belief, as they say.
Yep.
Hope springs eternal. And so does scumbaggery, I found. So, you
know. The fine art, the fine science of scumbaggery.
Yes, yes. All right, Jay Widener, everybody, the finest scientist looking into the intricacies of scumbaggery that I've met in a long, long time. And his website is jaywidener.com. And thanks very much for coming on the show. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And the archives will be at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And we'll see you again sometime.